1, 2, 3, 4. Some might be offended that I'm sharing the secret. I'll make an exception because I think you'll keep it. What I'm telling you's true. Cross my heart, hope to die. What have you got to lose? Why would I lie?
Hello and welcome to We Always Lie to Strangers, a podcast about Ozark's history, folklore, and beyond. My name is Sharp Woolston.
I'm Daniel Smiley.
I'm Gus Carlson.
And I'm Raymond Mathis.
And we might always lie to strangers, but not on this show, because we're all friends here. Thank you for joining us. Now, today's yarn, the Gowrow.
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
I didn't realize this until I was specifically doing research for this episode, but every single tale of the Gowrow that you can find on the internet in any book, in any source, it all can be traced back to Vance Randolph's collection and our podcast namesake, We Always Lie to Strangers.
I don't think I own that one. I think I only
And one of the things I found interesting about the fact that all of these stories are and We Always Lie to Strangers is because it's been out of print for, I think, 70 years. And it's pretty hard to come a hold of, like, to come to get. God, I can't talk. But, I mean, mine popped up at Dixon Street Bookshop a couple of years ago, and they're not cheap either.
Yeah. Would you want to explain kind of the importance of Vance Randolph? Because, again, we're nerds, so we're kind of taking it for granted, but I didn't know who the hell that was.
I'm just kidding. I know.
But it's literally because my mom took a folklore class at the University of Arkansas and had the book that I read in high school, and she was like, oh, yeah, he's important, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
I learned about him because I lived with Daniel in college.
Yeah, Vance Randolph is just, when you say the premier Ozarks folklorist?
At least the first. Yeah, premier.
The first was S.C. Turnbow, who predated Vance Randolph by...
Vance Randolph's like the definitive folklorist.
Yeah, I've never even heard of the guy. I thought you were going to throw a Max Hunter in there or something.
S.C. Turnbow, Silas Claiborne Turnbow. And Turnbow was around from 1844 to 1925.
What did he write?
His writing is very similar to Vance Randolph. I think Vance Randolph was influenced by him because he just did a lot of talking to people. Vance Randolph was a little more focused on folklore. Vance Randolph did a lot of stuff, but he was a little more into folk beliefs, folklore, folk tradition.
Cultural.
And, yes.
Arts.
And also
dirty jokes.
Yes. And Turnbow was more focused on genealogy. And okay. he has a lot of books that are like,
so it's
tell
more,
me about getting attacked by the bear.
So it's more historical versus, I mean, yeah, I think we would call Vance Randolph today almost an anthropologist as much as a mm-hmm. folklorist. With the fact that, you know, he collected sayings, he collected the songs,
well,
obviously.
And also, like, folk remedies and things like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. One of the books I have in my room right now is essentially an Ozarks slang dictionary that Vance Randolph is involved in writing.
I think his most popular books are probably Pissing in the Snow, which is a collection of, like, dirty jokes, and then Ozark Magic and Folklore, which is, you know, on the tin what that is, yeah.
Well, they're both still
and those are
thrift,
still... Yes, they're both...
I mean, but for
our audience, they are accessible, even the rare ones, on the internet.
There's a lot of Ozarks monsters that we want to dedicate episodes to.
The Tysons, the Waltons.
So I think we're all a fan of Ozarks monsters and cryptozoology, and it's with a heavy heart that I say that I think we're also all non-believers in a lot
for
of
now.
Regional monsters, and with the Gowrow, like many other monsters, the answer is simple.
Who's to say?
Classic 19th century yellow journalism.
Yep.
Now, I didn't write out who Vance Randolph was, but I did write down the definition of yellow journalism as given by Britannica.
Coined by Sullivan, the newspaper man, of course.
Yes. And so...
Of course.
Yellow journalism is the use of lurid features and sensationalized news and newspaper publishing to attract readers and increase circulation. Now that's
love lurid features.
That's the definition from Britannica, and I would go off into Yale journalism with Sullivan and William Randolph Hearst because it is very interesting. But this is an Ozarks podcast, not a New York City podcast. I've got three Galrow tales for you today. If y'all are ready for it.
I am not. How do we know the pronunciation? Because this has been a point of contention, I feel like, internally for years. Is it a Galrow? Is it a Go-row? Is it a Gal?
I've only ever had Galrow.
So I believe, I've always said Galrow. I think I at some point I had seen a pronunciation guide that said that. And I also will give another reason why I think it's Galrow.
Instead of Galrow? Because there's a part of me that wants it to be Galrow. Galrow, but
well,
I agree with you.
We might cover that later.
Galrow is fine.
Galrow
is his French cousin.
Galrow. With the Chateau of Galrow.
Now, the Galrow was a supposedly giant green lizard-like reptile that was 20 feet long with giant tusk, horn bristles down its spine, and a long tail with a scythe on the end of it. And they hatched out of soft eggs the size of beer kegs.
Soft.
It's a normal unit of measuring for the Ozarks.
Yes, of course.
Is that a metric beer keg or an imperial?
I'm not sure.
Probably imperial.
Now, the most famous incident involving the Galrow, mostly because there's actual photocopies of the newspaper printing, is the account of William Miller in 1897. I have seen sources that say that the newspaper is the Arkansas Gazette, but having seen the photocopy of the newspaper, there is no name on it of an author or a newspaper or anything.
Perfect.
In the story, Miller had traveled to Blanco in Searcy County for business.
No way that that's pronounced Blanco, like, correctly in Spanish. Blanco.
So Blanco?
There's out there an old Blanco.
I bet
I bet
it's Blanco. Blanco.
I'm going with Blanco. Blanco up there.
Play.
Blanco.
Blanco up there next to Mount Judy.
Now he was described in the newspaper piece as being a well-known businessman of the city. Again, sources said he was from Little Rock, but it does not mention what this city is. And We Always Lie to Strangers, he's called a traveling salesman. Now, I looked up Blanco on a map, partially because in the newspaper article, there is a quote that says, after Miller arrived in Blanco, the people of the whole township, as well as the townships of St. Joe and Richland, were in a fever over the described Galrow. I spent a lot of times on maps trying to find Blanco or Richland, and ultimately, I have found two roads that are both very close to Snowball. So Blanco Road is north of Snowball, and if you type in Blanco on a map, it puts you right into the middle of a field about a mile due north of Snowball.
So I do want to know what maps that you're looking at, because by searching Blanco, Arkansas, I've got it on a map.
And where is it for you?
It's off of Calf Creek.
Yes, this is what we're talking about, but it's about a mile north of Snowball.
Raymond Mathis with the hard-hitting investigative journalism.
Yeah, Googling it.
Ray, it is about a mile north of
Snowball. I'm going to say it's about a mile and a half, 2 miles. I don't know how big Snowball is. It looks like it's 2 miles north of
it. Might also be a field, actually.
Of the hippie house, which looks like is an Airbnb you can rent. It looks pretty quaint, though, the hippie house does.
Well, that's not what this episode is about. Anyway, so we'll just say, you know, this is near Snowball, which is kind of near Marshall.
If you get, you're going to be on highway, looks like 377/74 up into Snowball. Oh, there's also a place called Mr. Barn. It's just a barn, and it says corporate office.
May I ask
office.
If there's a Mrs. Barn?
It says corporate office. There are 10 reviews of Mr. Barn. Beautiful field with a barn. During certain holidays and seasons, the owners like to decorate hay bales to match the theme. Sometimes you can see the only elk herd of Arkansas here before sunrise and after sunset.
Definitely not the only elk herd.
That is very false.
Yeah, especially in Marshall.
Well, listen, someone that's reviewing Mr. Barn always lies to strangers, and we appreciate
it. Listen, this is my favorite barn and field in all of Arkansas, says Vierdarwa. I don't know why.
We are not brought to you by Mr. Barn.
But it's
Raymond being like, I talk too much, and now you're fucking reading reviews.
You encouraged me to do this.
I did not tell you to read Google reviews or Yelp reviews of Mr. Bard.
Guys,
we decided pre-podcast, pre-recording, to have more context. We didn't mean reviews for the Airbnb next to the town that used to exist where a giant lizard monster attacked.
Now, in the newspaper article, Miller recounts that the locals in Blanco had been terrorized by the Gowral for months and wrote, quote, "The Gowral would steal down from the mountains at night and commence his depredations." Lots of wonderful quotes from this article, by the way.
Just sounds like a Substack now.
Yeah, I've got a couple of more really fun quotes from this newspaper article. Miller asked why it was called the Gowral, which was the sound that it made. You know, Gowral.
It's like a gecko.
It's a golem situation. While Miller was visiting Blanco for the trip, quote, "A youngster who resides in the neighborhood discovered tracks of the Gowral while rabbit hunting. Being alarmed at the ponderous size and peculiar shape, he fled in a great consternation to a farmhouse and notified the inmates of the presence of the tracks."
The inmates? Is that what
that
they call people?
That is the quote from the newspaper, yes. The people in the house were inmates. Now, Miller was involved in a posse to track the Gowral, whose prints, I might add, were easily tracked because of the recent snow. Now, let's remember that this is a reptile beast.
Yeah, known for its hot-blooded tendencies.
Getting tracked through the snow. They followed the tracks to a riverbank where they disappeared. The posse searched the riverbank for miles and miles before they came to a large cove hidden by trees that came right up to the river and had evidence of something large repeatedly coming and going from the entrance of the cave into the river. Right? Seems believable so far. The posse entered the cave and, quote, "were confronted by a sight which made each particular hair stand on end like quills upon the fretful porcupine." That's my favorite.
It was just the Gowral and its, you know, dinnerware saying, "Hello, guys. Do you want a aperitif? Oh.
You know what makes it Italian. Champagne is it being from the Champagne region of France." That was my Gowral impression. No, what they found in the cave was skeletons and bones and skulls of horses, sheep, dogs, hogs, wild animals, and even humans. Now, they exited the cave, and then the posse heard a great racket as the Gowral returned to its cave. Miller took a photograph, which, of course, was lost.
Wait, what year are we in?
2006.
1890s.
So we are in the 1890s, and we've got the big-ass camera where you have to, like, hide behind it and, like, do the poof flash thing.
1897 is when it's supposed to be.
I'm not a historian of photography, but I think shit was still pretty ladge back then.
But he did take the photograph, which, of course, is lost. But a sketch was made based off of the photograph.
Perfect.
Of course. And we couldn't preserve it, but we could preserve the we couldn't preserve the tintype photo, but we could preserve the hand-sketched Crayola drawing. Okay, no, continue.
Now, as the Gowral returned to the cave, the posse fired a volley and killed the Gowral.
So they took its picture and then murdered it.
Got it to pose, took forever. It was like every family reunion.
It was thrashing in its death throes and it's whipping its tail around everywhere. And the scythe on the end of the tail cut down a number of small cedar trees and also cut off the leg of a man named Tom Britton, Brennan. What is interesting is I looked up Thomas Brennan, and there is records of him in Arkansas in the 1870s.
How many
How many legs?
It was just land records, but I'm believing this to mean that the story actually is true. Now, Miller had a long look over the dead Gowrow and decided that it was a member of a lost species of pachyderm.
So wait, it went from a lizard to an elephant?
Yeah, it actually, to him, it just looked like scales.
Well, doesn't it have tusks? It's supposed to have tusks, yeah.
Okay. Okay, see, and that, you know, woolly mammoth, they're there in the snow, I'm back on board. Did it ever describe the footprints?
I think the idea is that it had webbed feet.
You know, what's interesting is another Arkansas cryptid, but not Ozarks-based, so we'll never do an episode on it. But the White River Monster is supposed to look like an elephant as well.
We'll get to the White River Monster eventually, I think.
It might swim upstream into the Ozarks sometimes.
Now, more or less immediately after the Gowrow was killed, Miller left for Little Rock on business, continued business. But he did say that he arranged to have the bones and skin of the Gowrow sent to the Smithsonian Institute in D.C., but nothing ever arrived.
What about the meat?
I'll get around to it.
Oh, they totally had a Gowrow roast.
Well, also, no one in the area outside of the posse ever saw any evidence either.
It's because they ate it.
You tell me. All right, now we're off to Gowrow story number two. Our next Gowrow story is the one that I heard first, and I'm pretty sure all of us heard first, which involves the Devil's Hole in South Arkansas.
Hell yeah, we tried to go find that once.
Yeah, actually.
Wait, in where, Arkansas?
Self.
It's in northern
Boone
County.
Yeah, this is the version that was in The Weird U.S., which is a good reason
why. That's how we all found it.
That's how me and Sharp became friends, honestly.
Now, South Arkansas, much like Blanco and Richland mentioned before, is a ghost town these days.
Can you find it by Googling?
Yes.
Is there a Mrs. Barn in South?
Now, when Daniel and I, in high school, went to South to look for Devil's Hole Cave, I think the only way we could even tell we were in South, because there wasn't like a highway sign, there was a farm that just said, like, you know, Wilson Ranch, South Arkansas, or something like that. Daniel's Hole. Daniel.
Daniel's Hole. Let's go.
Oh, man.
I got a shit at Gowrow.
Devil's Hole was located near the South Post Office on land owned by a man named E.J. Rhodes. We Always Lie to Strangers, the book, describes the cave as a very deep fissure. I had always imagined it as like a more traditional cave where there's a rock wall and there's a hole in it. But this is saying a fissure, which is kind of strange. It made me think of the Fault Line swimming hole.
I want to hear us all say the word that Sharp is calling this cave.
I was thinking that too.
Because I would call it a fissure, not a fisher. Fissure. I've been a fisherman, but I ain't never been to a fissure. So
listen, that's
Daniel,
just how I say it.
Daniel,
I don't think it matters.
No, I just want to know what side of
fissure.
What, say it one more time for posterity.
Fissure.
Fissure. Okay. Thank you.
Like a fissure
with
bomb.
Z's.
Fusion.
Like a fizzy lifty drink.
Raymond's class tendencies coming out here.
Raymond's drunk on White Russians.
There's a little bit of coffee in there. It takes the edge off.
E.J. Rhodes, who owned the land that the fissure was on, descended into it by rope, and after about 200 feet, he hit a ledge. So he couldn't go down deeper, went back to the surface, and then came back with some men, and they tied a flat iron to the rope.
Who has 200 feet of rope just lying around? I feel like that's quite a bit of rope. Well,
this is a different time.
It's a different time.
Sorry.
How many feet is that?
250.
How many feet would you call that, Dan?
250.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good to know.
For the listening audience, Daniel just
For the listening audience, I just pulled down a 250-foot long piece of rope.
Do you think that's period accurate?
No, it's nylon.
Now, when Rhodes and the men slipped the rope in with the flat iron, they heard something after the flat iron hit the ledge that had been discovered before.
Oh, you hit me on the head.
Well, it was hissing sounds.
Sweewees.
So they pulled the rope back up with the flat iron, and they had noticed that it appeared that the flat iron had teeth marks on it. So then they dropped it down again a second time, and when it hit the bottom, again they heard hissing sounds from the deep.
Saw-wee-wee-haw. The devil's hole, which is a fissure.
But this time, when they brought the rope back up, it had been cut as clean as if it had been sliced by a knife. They did it a third time, this time tying a stone to the rope.
This time tying a little boy to the rope.
Yeah. And then when they pulled the rope back up, again it had been cut. Now, I've got one more little brief story about the Gowrau that's in We Always Lie to Strangers. Though notably, this was just kind of a known yarn that was spun around the South in the late 19th, early 20th century. Because in We Always Lie to Strangers, Vance Randolph said that he also heard someone say that they had heard the story in Alabama, and it wasn't about a Gowrau. The story was that a man had fed a Gowrau a wagon load of dried apples. And then after they rehydrated in its stomach, it got stuck in a burrow. So then the man was able to capture it, at which point he set up a tent, put up a sign, you know, with a painting of this awful creature, and charged people to come in and look at the Gowrau. And then, while people are in the tent and he's given his speech about the Gowrau, he goes into the back, and then there's the sound of chains and screaming and chaos.
And French.
And he runs out bloody, and he goes, "The Gowrau got out! Run!" And then the tent collapses, and everyone flees. And, you know, they don't ask for a refund. They just run.
Great bit.
And, yeah, and that's the last little bit. Now, since we have so few Gowrau stories, I've got a list of reptile-adjacent monsters from the Ozarks, if you want me to go through them real fast.
Do I?
Yeah, let's hear them.
Here's our handful of Ozarks cryptids that are lizard-like, or reptiles. One is the Jimplicute. Which the Jimplicute was described as a ghost dinosaur, and apparently its sole purpose was, and its creation was to scare slaves.
Did anyone else just have like a bunch of ripples of excitement from hearing the words ghost dinosaur?
Yes.
And then
immediately punctured by used to scare slaves.
I've got something that I personally had always associated more with the upper Midwest, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin.
The misty West.
Well, the High Behind.
Not the Hodag?
Not the Hodag. But the High Behind is a creature that stalks in the wood but is never seen because of its prowess of hiding behind trees.
So how do we know that's a reptile?
Asking the important questions.
Well, specifically, in We Always Lie to Strangers, the descriptions that Vance Randolph got from the Ozarks was that it was a lizard the size of a bull.
That can hide behind our very giant trees here.
Well, it can suck in its guts.
Well, at the time, it wouldn't have been clear-cut.
In the 1800s, it would have been still, like, heavily logged.
Well, it can suck in its guts so tight it can hide behind trees without ever being seen. But, you know,
isn't that normally part of lumberjack lore, the hide behind?
Yeah.
Well, here it was more called the High Behind, but also occasionally the Nigh Behind. But yeah, again with the lumberjack stuff, that's why I kind of
the High Behind.
If someone's able to describe it, there's got to be one hide behind that's not very good at his job.
That's true. And then I've got two more little lizards that can fit together in a single sentence.
I'm ready for it.
One is the King Doodle, or the Wang Doodle. Which was supposed to be a gigantic version of the Mountain Boomer, which is the Ozark's name for the collared lizard. And the final is the Gollywog, which was a giant salamander believed to live in the White River.
Mm-hmm. But, how big was the giant salamander?
And I don't think it gave a size.
Because that's a real thing.
There you go. It's the Hellbender.
Yeah. I've seen him on the Buffalo before.
Really?
One. Yeah. It was dead, floating on the top of the water. But it was massive.
Oh, there were some funny names for those that I can't remember because I also was looking at Hellbender shit.
A wangdoodle?
No.
I just mentioned it.
It's like a snot lizard, I think was one of them. It's colloquial names.
Thanks for joining us.
Thought we were pissing in the snow.
Oh, wait.
Pissing in the show.
I do have, like, if you look up Gowrow, because it's like, I did a comic series about the Ozarks like a decade back. And I had a Gowrow in it. And so now it's like, I think I was like one of the few people on the internet that actually heard of one. So now if you Google Gowrow, there's like a 50% chance that like the crypto wikis or whatever will be using some drawing of mine, which is kind of fun.
Oh, entering himself into Ozark folklore. I'm going to image search Gowrow right now.
It's not a terribly accurate description, because it's got a...
What color? Right, oh, yours is definitely... It looks like the fifth one, if I had to guess. This looks like a Gus drawing. Was it kind of fat with webbed feet?
No. Oh. It's the lizard... It's the snake one with tusks, and... let's see.
There was a time period where Gus had the most common visual description of the Gowrow.
Oh, I do see your... I do see a thing from Eve of the...
but it has
Ozarks,
recently flipped again.
If we are plugging
it's back to being
your work from a decade ago.
Yeah, right. It's kind of flipped back to being something that's a little bit more accurate to the actual illustration and description of the Gowrow from Vance Randolph, where it has four legs and toes and things like that. But it was cool.
I don't
just
see
it kind of flip around. Like, I've seen people use my design on like a t-shirt and stuff like that. And, you know, just kind of cross-pollination. So it's cool.
Did you sue them?
No, it wasn't worth it.
Missed opportunity. Have you drawn one with a beret?
No, but I feel like I'm going to have to, huh?
Excellent.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Y'all come back now, you hear?
Hello, Sharp here. Just a couple of quick corrections. One, Raymond was upset that he misspoke. When referring to yellow journalism, he meant to say Irwin Wardman instead of Sullivan. I meant to say Joseph Pulitzer and William Randolph Hearst instead of Sullivan and Hearst. And then the discussion about yellow journalism was going kind of long, so to keep the flow of the episode moving well, we cut out a couple of minutes, but I want to mention that Gus was correct about yellow journalism and its etymology and its relation to early cartoon strips. And then for clarity's sake, the only source was We Always Lie to Strangers by Vance Randolph, with the exception of the newspaper article about the Gowrow that you can find on the Gowrow page on the Encyclopedia of Arkansas. I mentioned other sources, but what I meant to say is that every other source is just rewording what was found in We Always Lie to Strangers. Again, we'd like to thank Plain Old Heath for the theme song, and thanks for listening, and we hope you keep coming back. Thanks.